Welcome to the Good Hard Story Podcast, where we believe that the good story and the hard story can be the exact same story. I'm Catherine Wolf, and I'm a stroke survivor, a speaker, an author, and co-founder of Hope Heals. Tune in here every week for conversations about wholeheartedly living in a good hard story. Join me in this joyful rebellion to the darkness where we discover the treasures hidden in our hurting. Friends, today's conversation will bless your life. My dear friend and Hope Heals teammate, Caroline Young, is here to interview me on some stuff that probably most people want to ask me, but maybe don't have the courage. Caroline has watched me these last 4 years minister in various contexts very closely. She's traveled with me all over the country. She's been to camp for 4 years. She's just in the thick of life and ministry here at Hope Heals, and she is going to ask me some things that prompt a fascinating discussion on how to ultimately live with our broken hearts. How do we do life when it's different than we thought it was going to be? So I pray these moments, these minutes can bless you in your story, whatever you're dealing with, that you can feel so confident and not ever alone in the good, hard story that God is writing in your life. What a gift to have the amazing Caroline Young with me today for the Good Hard Story podcast. Caroline wears 10,000 hats here at Hope Heals. And for today, how would you identify what you do here? You do everything, but how would you identify?
I would identify as a podcast interviewer for the first time ever after 4 years on staff.
That is a great title for today. I think you do a lot more than that, but we can leave it at that. But maybe I should add like relationships and travel companion and
volunteer coordinator at Hope Heals Camp.
Right, volunteer coordinator, which is no small feat for Hope Heals Camp, and really like pretty much everything.
That's the beauty of working on a small team and for working for Hope Heals as long as I have, is you get to see a little bit of the entire ministry.
Well, that is so true. And you have been with us. Oh my gosh, Caroline, is it exactly 4 years tomorrow?
Almost.
Oh my goodness. So you've been with us forever and have marked our time in Atlanta with your amazing presence. And what a gift you're here today, and I think you are going to interview me, right?
Yes, I am. I'm really excited. I feel like I will be speaking on behalf of the people, being listeners, people that are sitting in the audience at events, campers, volunteers, our followers.
Uh-huh.
I feel like over the years of working for Hope Heals, one of the questions I get most often is, what have you learned from Catherine? What wisdom have you gleaned from her, and how does she do what she does? So we're thinking we'll make this episode a little bit of a how-to.
Oh, cool. I love how-tos, because I'm like that. I want the how-tos. I want the list of what to do for sure.
We want to share the wisdom and the wealth, especially the wisdom that I feel like I've gleaned from working for you for 4 years. So I've gathered some questions that I feel like I get the most often.
Okay, and you feel free to pipe in if you have some answers too. How about that? Okay.
I will.
Good.
I will share the load with you.
Okay, excellent.
So a great first one to start out with would be how to engage suffering people well. I think a lot of us can become intimidated by friends and family members that we know and love in our lives that are suffering, and think, how do I even go about entering in? Where do I start? What if I say the wrong thing? Mm-hmm. Maybe it'll be easier if I stay away because I don't want to mess up or say something that could ultimately hurt them rather than help them. And
right.
I feel like I've seen you engage suffering people with a lot of grace and a lot of love and a lot of compassion on multiple platforms, whether it be in person or email, on Instagram. How do you engage those people well?
Yeah, I feel like you've had an extremely unique perspective. Probably not many people besides like yours truly would have had the perspective of seeing the lady planning her event that needs love and our sweet friends with all manner of physical disabilities who need care and love, and really everybody in between, because everybody's going through something. And I pray I'm navigating that tension of really loving people and seeing them and knowing them and not being undone by them is the reality. Mm. That's very hard, because entering into deep pain, which is what is almost on the tip of the tongue of anyone who ever hears me speak, is they want to explode their story of suffering on me for legitimate reasons. I've opened the floodgates, or at our camp, or really any opportunity that a stranger perhaps gets face to face with me, they want to tell me the worst moment of their life. And that could feel really difficult, could put me in the bed for a week. And yet I think there's something very beautiful about learning how to truly empathize, how to really hear and make someone feel known and like they belong in their pain, and yet not internalize it to where I'm taking it home and can't sleep at night thinking about the horrific story. And I really pray to empathize, but not internalize, and just keep almost a level of just deeply seeing, but not, I don't know the word exactly, not taking it home, really leaving it on the table a bit. And I don't know that I'm perfectly doing that, to be honest. You know, there sometimes you can't. You know, I'm forever marked by some encounters in these last 10 years of ministry that there's no way I will not be forever thinking about that phone call to the woman who had to have her leg cut off the next morning. There's no way to not remember how that felt in my body, how I just longed to comfort her, and just how guilty I felt, how ashamed I felt that I've had such a paper cut compared to having a limb removed, and just a lot of complex issues. And perhaps what we are so called to do is be present. Is give the ministry of tears before the ministry of truth. And I pray I do that.
I was going to say, I feel like I've watched you do that, especially over the phone, multiple times.
Because I'm always stop sobbing out loud.
Well, maybe that's the answer, that you don't always have the perfect words to say, but you are always quick to take the phone call and you're quick to show up. Well, you know, I think of four phone calls in particular we've taken during the workday, and maybe the how-to answer is that you don't exactly have the perfect right words to say, but instead you're giving the ministry of your presence.
Mm-hmm. And that's the whole name of the game, I think. I think you're so right. I will very frequently say the wrong thing or say the stupid thing. You know, I remember someone DM'd Jay and I to call them because they were in the hospital ICU and the doctors wanted to turn off the machines. And they said, can you call us? And we're like, oh my gosh. And we call. And the first thing I say is, hi, this is Catherine Wolf. How are you? I mean, this woman is in the worst moment of her entire life. And I'm saying, how are you? That is so stupid. What is wrong with
you're
me?
You're human. Just like
but I was so
us.
I was so nervous, I think, too, that how are you seemed like a good choice for that moment. And I mean, I'm haunted. Like, how could I do that to that poor woman? She's terrible. This is the worst moment she's ever had on earth.
You know, yet, she looks back on that phone call, though, and that's not the first thing that she thinks of.
Well, exactly. So. And that is what is so beautiful. Showing up is the work.
Right.
Is you can botch it really bad, really bad, but like, do the thing, stay. And I am constantly aware that so much of my ministry is not with words. Thank you, Lord, not with words. That I can say some really terrible, dumb stuff, but if I'm present and looking someone in the eye and helping them to feel like they belong, that's a game changer for how they're experiencing the moment.
So if you're showing up time and time again, if you're giving the gift of your presence for our caretakers listening, our friends, family members of people that are suffering, how do you avoid compassion fatigue if you keep putting yourselves in those scenarios to show up and enter in the pain, be present?
Mm-hmm.
How do you avoid burnout?
Mm-hmm. That's such a good question. And I would say the question in there, the secondary question is, how do you avoid compassion fatigue, and how do you not pipe it in and just become like numb to
right.
suffering? How do you not just say, okay, it's officially too much, I'm tapped out? I think the answer time and time again, and I think Henry Nouwen is the one who talked about this, that the antidote to compassion fatigue is community, that when you're actually seeing and feeling and living among those who are suffering, then you can't possibly be piping it in. You can't possibly be fatigued. If anything, you are with them and forward, recognizing we're all in this life, we're all a mess, it all looks different, but we've all got stuff and we're all going through stuff, we're all suffering together. So I think it's about community, proximity, and not being the, hate to say it, but celebrity mega pastor who's phoning it in and not talking to the congregants and losing touch with reality. Mm-hmm. And I think I really feel called to do the opposite, is to, you know, at the end of the night, as you know well, about the last thing you want to do is sign books at a book line. You know, it's going to take like over an hour and it's going to be a lot of tears and a lot of sad stories. And yet I'm like, this is my moment. This is when I get to show up and practice what I'm preaching about. You don't get to go back to the green room and peace out the back door and never talk to the people you have just spoken to. But what they are longing for is to talk to you, is to have someone dignify their pain by looking them in the eye. And I think it is a holy burden.
I think that's what's so beautiful about Hope Heals Camp too, right? You think like, I'm going to volunteer and be at this place that will be serving individuals and families experiencing disability. And by the end of it, you realize, no, we're simply living in community with one another.
Yeah.
There's that mutuality of ministry going on where I know so much more about you than just your suffering or just your disability or whatever it may be.
Right.
Instead, I know you and your whole person so that I can show up for every part of you, not just the part of you that's suffering.
Yes. Oh, gosh.
You say often in your teaching, you have the capacity to do hard things.
Yes.
And I have memories of hearing that over and over again, usually from, you know, an AV room while you're on stage.
Yeah.
And in the beginning, I remember thinking, I don't have the same capacity that you do.
Right.
I genuinely believe that God has wired you differently than me, that like you have some secret sauce or some chemical makeup that's allowing you to take the hard that is in your story and make it really good. And one of the things I am always trying to apply in my own life, especially in the season of life that I'm in now, is like, what are those tools that Catherine is referring to? Like, how do I have the capacity to do the hard things in the good story that God's writing in my life?
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you could answer that, like what tools are in your toolbox?
Well, okay. First of all, that is so vulnerable and honest and real. And probably most people feel that way. And no one tells me that. You know, like I feel like people are not going to say like, you're just so unrelatable. I mean, not that you're saying it that way, but do you know what I mean? And yet,
well, sometimes it can feel not unrelatable, more I should say, like, unattainable.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like you've almost reached this point in your story that feels, it's amazing. It feels like, you know, so hope filled and joy filled. And I almost have to stop myself from putting you on any sort of pedestal that would make me think that you have somehow accessed tools that I don't have access to in my own story to make right. those hard things good.
Right. And I'm trying to very much think like how I do the same thing to other people. Mm-hmm. I could never be that. I could never get there. I could never show up in that way to the story. And yet the reality is, yeah, you can.
Because we all have access to the same
right.
truth.
Absolutely. There's no secret sauce here.
Right.
And there's no like special wiring. I mean, definitely. I am a naturally positive person, 100%. The reality is, even though it could feel completely unrelatable, I think here I am 15 years out. So it's not like you were hanging out with me 2 years out and like, wow, that's so unattainable. It's more like after 15 years of this life, you kind of get to a place where you recognize maybe if things aren't changing, you change how you think about it. Mm. And maybe I'm getting chills saying that because there is a sadness in that. That
there's also an empowerment in it.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. There is. But 15 years of, you know, a lot of heartbreak, honestly, mm-hmm. a lot of really sad, wait, no way, we're here again, or, you know, the broken bones or the falls or the surgeries or whatever. Here's what I think. You can choose to decide that you have the support of Jesus himself and have the perspective of the living Christ as an example. And you do have the stuff inside of you to cope, and you cope. And then when you've coped for a while, you kind of thrive because mm-hmm. that's good. I don't need to write that down. That when you're coping for long enough well, I call it hoping while you cope, that when you hope while you cope for a number of years, you cross over to flourishing.
Because you put in the hard work.
To living in the reality with hope and hanging out there long enough and trusting the Lord enough to say, if this is it for my story, then I want to live it well mm-hmm. every day for the rest of my life.
And I know I have the capacity to do that because of who you're saying you are in my story. Yes. I'm not doing it in my own strength, but because you've promised that you will be with me while I cope.
Exactly. And you live knowing that 2 Peter 1:3 is true, that his divine power has given us everything we need. Mm-hmm. So we've got it. It's in here. He will supply all of our needs. He's meeting them as they arise. And you're kind of living in this like thin place of pivoting a lot. And I think that is a part of my secret sauce, if that's a thing, is I am very willing to pivot. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why exactly. I think years of walking
practice.
With the Lord. Yeah, practice.
You've had to multiple times. I was thinking that as you were talking, over the last 15 years, you have seen God show up for you time and time again.
Every time.
As you've been coping and hoping, he has proved himself to you every single time. So at this point, now you can thrive within your limitations because you've had a lot of practice
right.
over the last 15 years.
Absolutely.
Of living that out.
I can't remember if I've said this on the podcast before, but it bears repeating if I have, that recently the 15th year anniversary was coming up and I was in a therapy session and I was telling my therapist, like, it doesn't sting as much as it probably could or did 10 years ago. Like, there's not the same sting of the anniversary. And we were processing why that is. And she said, I think it stings less because you love who you've become on the other side of suffering. And that's very hard, particularly as a female, to accept that sort of recognition that you love anything about yourself. You know, to think you love anything you are or have become or are doing, like, you're not supposed to love yourself, right?
It's definitely not what the world's telling us.
Right, exactly. But what if there is truly loving who you've become because you recognize God's hand in your life? And you're like, I love who I've become because I see what's happening here. Mm. I see the story God's writing and I love the story. And that changes how you feel. So it's kind of like constantly a chicken or the egg thing. It's like, right. I'm loving it and then I'm becoming because I love it. I love because I'm becoming. And then you kind of end up here. And it's not really anything unattainable or magical. It's more just showing up
and
for the
claiming
story.
It. Like, you have worked really hard to claim that truth over your life.
Yeah.
And say, like, I'm going to put down anything, you know, that is not of the Lord, that's not serving me, anything that the world's telling me about what life could have looked like, should have looked like. And instead, I'm going to claim the truth that He's so clearly given me, and I'm going to choose to walk forward and live in that.
Which
is completely countercultural. I mean, you've worked hard at doing that. And I think that's what you mean when you say we have the capacity.
Mm-hmm.
Is because
it is.
We can decide to live that way.
Right.
And it's not easy.
No.
But we can put the things down that are not true about our story, and we can pick the things up that are
true and put it in our backpack,
right,
and carry it with us through life 100%.
Day in and day out.
And so much of that has got to be putting to death expectations.
Mm.
I mean, that has just been such a huge thing in my story, is I full on know I'm never going to be this, that, her. And yet, why am I trying to be?
Right.
That's the story.
So clearly not the story that God's writing in my life. That goes really well into our next question of how do you live with contentment in a reality that you were not expecting?
Yeah.
Like, your expectations have completely changed.
Expectations are everything, aren't they? We are all possibly wanting the dream from when we were a little girl to come true.
Because we think we deserve it.
Right. Oh, yeah. We are entitled to that life. And I think things were so awful, honestly, for the years right after the stroke for the first year I didn't eat food, you know? So it's like next level horrific when you're young. I mean, just turned 26 years old.
Things that you have not even dared to think could possibly happen.
Right. Like, things were so awful for so long. I mean, I could talk for an hour just about the legit, like, soul crushing, horrific pain on every level of all of it. That I think it enabled me to reset the baseline of, like, okay, since I've tasted true horror, maybe I can live well into this story. And now I'm not really worried about the expectation of this or that happening. I'm just grateful for where I am, for whatever is in the story. And, you know, something about, like, relearning to walk and having a paralyzed face and, you know, all the things that are just really intense do give you some dramatic tools for that backpack of how to live well. Yeah. And honestly, we are all expecting this world to overwhelm us with how great it is. Mm. Like, this is going to be so awesome to live this life, and it's going to be so amazing to be on earth, and my wildest dreams are going to come true. And we expect way less of God to show up.
Gosh.
We're like, that's kind of like, cool, there's God, I guess, whatever. And what if we flipped it? What if we expected more of God and less of this world? You've heard it before. I just think that is such wisdom to expect more of God overwhelming our circumstances and less of what the circumstances are going to be like. And maybe that's the beginning of some real joy.
Redefine everything, pretty much. I mean, I remember one of the first teaching points I ever heard from you at a speaking event was, what is actually good?
Right. Oh, yeah.
First of all, if we're living a reality that we didn't think we would, that we weren't expecting, because we think it's not good, the reality we're currently living in, well, yeah, then let's go back to what good actually is.
Oh,
and if
goodness.
I'm expecting more of God and less of this world in my reality, then I actually already have access to everything that is good. Which I'm sure you've talked about on the podcast already. But
yeah,
I feel like it bears repeating.
I absolutely have talked about it 10,000 times in all the places, every year at camp, on the podcast a ton. But it absolutely bears repeating time and time and time again, because it is a true, legitimate game changer for our stint on Earth. And it's that... A, you can survive anything by redefining everything. So much of life is how we think about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's so powerful. It's so empowering to recognize, like, I get to decide how I feel about this story.
Right.
And we think we're just captives of what the world says about the story. No, you're not. You get to decide how you feel. And specifically about good, I'm definitely into redefining good. And yes, I already said this, but I'm going to say it again. When we see God's goodness as basically a reward for our lives, it's going to mess us up, because it doesn't work that way at all. But when we see the good things of God as already being inside of us, as Sir Richard Baker says, the peace of conscience, joy in the Holy Spirit, fruition of presence in this life, and assurance of his face in the next. When we know that is already inside of us, we live differently. We're no longer afraid. We are redefining how we look at Psalm 84:11, that no good thing has he withheld, which makes no sense as we see brothers and sisters whose lives are full of major pain, major heartache, major struggle. Like, surely God is full on withholding the good things. And yet, when redefining and recognizing the good things are already inside of us, and we get to keep those, they're not going anywhere, and they have nothing to do with this physical world we are living in.
Or with yourself, which I feel like is so encouraging, because when we say we have the capacity to do hard things, I can decide how I feel about my story. That's not a bunch of self-help mumbo jumbo. It's very different than manifesting and saying, I'm going to make this happen because I want it to happen.
Oh,
yes. Instead, we're saying, I've already been given the good things of God. Mm-hmm. Like, I have the Holy Spirit. I am assured that I will have him, you know, in the future, and I'm assured that I have him now in the present. Therefore, I can live into my current reality because I don't actually have to do anything. He has already done it for me.
Preach it, sister. Preach it.
I'm preaching to myself.
Oh yeah, we're always preaching to our own hearts, aren't we?
We are.
That's the name of the game. The whole reason I have a speaking ministry is because I need to hear it. My heart needs to hear it time and time and time again.
Well, it's impactful when your own ears hear what your voice is saying.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Like, we need to be telling ourselves these truths day in and day out.
Because we have to get our soul on board. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, be bossy with your soul,
yes,
as you would say.
Yes, I have said that quite a lot, too, that we get to be bossy with our own soul. At Psalm 42:5, that we get to tell our soul, no, soul, this is what we are doing. We are choosing to rejoice in the Lord no matter what. And it's powerful. You kind of fake it till you make it.
I was about to say, then the feeling ends up following the action.
Right.
Because sometimes we have to start doing the actions before we actually feel it. I have a feeling post-stroke, you were doing a lot of actions before you actually felt them.
Right.
You know, you were putting into practice truths that had been there years and years and years before the stroke.
The reality is, so many times in life, the heart follows the hands. That when we are acting in love, for instance, this is a marriage point. When we are acting in love, we feel more in love.
Right.
And when we are acting in hate, we feel more hate. Mark it down. I think it's in The Meaning of Marriage. Tim Keller writes that.
Jay Wolf also authored an article for Darling Magazine about how the world needs new love songs. It was one of the first things I ever read by you guys in college. And he teaches on that exact point.
Oh my gosh. I can't believe you remember that. I didn't remember it until you said that beautiful article. Maybe we can link to it in the show notes of... Was it called Learning New Love Songs?
I think it's Why the World Needs New Love Songs.
Why the World Needs New Love Songs.
I think maybe around Valentine's Day in Darling Magazine.
Oh my gosh,
you can find it on my Facebook wall, circa year 2012.
I'm flipping out. I really think it's like 2012, 2013. Valentine's Day and Darling Magazine was like the coolest thing we'd ever heard of.
Yes.
Oh my gosh, that is so hilarious. But you're exactly right. Jay used to teach to our small group and eventually to our Sunday school class the Tim Keller Meaning of Marriage book, and very strongly makes that point that when you act in love, you feel more in love. And when you act in hate, you feel more hate. So the heart follows the hands.
Love that. Well, I think we have time for probably one or two more questions. We've talked a lot about on this episode of how you have the capacity to do hard things, how you get to decide how you feel about your story, how no one can take that from you. So when we talk about redefining, you know, different areas of our life, which is covered in Suffer Strong, beauty, suffering, celebration, how are some practical ways that we can go about redefining those areas?
Good question. Redefining anything in our lives means we really have to examine it. Look at what we think and why we think it about a certain topic.
See where the flaws are in the line of thinking.
Right, exactly. Tear it down. The lies we've believed about it. You know, we have things like beauty. We have to look at, wait, why do I think this is what it means to be beautiful?
Mm.
Where did I get that? Where did that origin story start? What lies fed how I understand my own story of beauty? And then burn it down if it's all a lie and rebuild something beautiful. You know, I heard recently, you know, you hear so much about deconstruction, deconstruction, deconstruction. What if it's about reconstruction? What if it's about, unravel, absolutely, tear it down, but then put it back together with some accuracy, with some biblical insight, and cling to Jesus. But wait, relearn that. I learned that
wrong. Don't just leave it where it is. Throw it out, get rid of it, but then make sure you're putting something back in its place.
Put it back together.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, I very much, things like beauty, actually. Like, my story of beauty began with things way before me. I've talked about this quite a lot.
Which is true for
pretty much everybody. Our stories with beauty have a lot to do with things said to us as children, I believe.
Right.
And we grow and are fed in these stories and as women identify just, you know, a lot of complex issues in our stories of beauty. And ultimately, when you pull back and look at it, beauty at a very basic level is about walking away from the shame we feel in our stories. That is what true beauty is. True beauty is recognizing this body is the only interface I will ever have with existence. This is it. And how am I going to cherish and love what God has given to me? It's not remotely attached to anything anybody else has ever said. I mean, please, it's about, whoa, wait, hold on. This is it. This is what God has given to me. What am I going to do with it?
This was his best idea for me.
Yep.
And am I really going to attempt to tear something down that he created?
Absolutely.
I love that. What about celebration? How can we redefine celebrating, which is something I feel like you do in the Wolf Home often?
Don't wait to celebrate.
It's like one of our favorite catchphrases around here.
Absolutely.
And the world would tell you maybe there's not that much to celebrate, obviously.
Oh, gosh.
After the pain that's taken place.
Oh, yeah.
How do we redefine what celebration looks like?
if I was waiting to celebrate for a number of outcomes, I would be waiting my entire life, for sure. And I definitely do not want to be the 90-year-old lady who's still waiting for reasons to celebrate. You know, that's ridiculous. Our culture has an absolute obsession with celebrating outcome. You know, we want to celebrate when the thing happens and when we hit this benchmark and when we get to this place and achieve this
weddings,
goal.
Births, graduations, degrees.
Exactly, exactly. Everything is based on an outcome.
Right.
But I think that is so misled. I think we must celebrate the process of going maybe to an outcome or not, because the reality is outcomes don't always come. And many, many times our friends in disability communities
know that better than anyone.
Absolutely, that we may not get the outcome, but we can celebrate the process of here and now, and celebrate not because we know what tomorrow holds. We don't. We don't know the future. But we can celebrate that we're here and we have each other and God is here. And we can celebrate his presence in our stories and his power to change the heartache in our stories. And we get to be a part of entering into a holy celebration where I read about this in Suffer Strong, that the distance between the pulpit and the party should not be so distinct. That there is a celebration and worship, and there is worship and celebration. That's one and the same. We all get to be a part of living a life that is celebratory because none of us know the outcomes of our stories.
And because it's worth celebrating right now. Like the question we just asked, how do you redefine? You just did it in that last answer.
Oh.
You said, like, this is what the world is telling me needs to be celebrated, outcomes, milestones. And instead, I'm going to choose to celebrate the process and where God has me right now, because what he's given me right now is worth celebrating.
Right.
I don't have to wait for what the world says is good or deems worthy of celebrating.
For instance, so if I was waiting to celebrate when I could drive again,
right,
or waiting to celebrate the day that I drive my kids to school on my own. You know, that may not come this side of heaven. However, I can ride with Jay to take my kids to school every day and narrate it to them. Do you know how amazing this is? How many mommies and daddies do you see in the carpool line? How many families in full go to school together each day? Goodness, your family is something special. That is worth celebrating. Let me bust out our gratitude journal right this moment, because this is a really cool life you're living. And do you see what I mean? I think you can flip things.
Yeah, flip the narrative on its head.
Change the narrative and say, no, this is actually a gift.
I think at the end of the day, it's important for all of us as listeners, followers, to remember we have access to the same power in the Holy Spirit as believers, that we have access to redefine these areas of our lives. We have access to minister to one another, because none of it's out of our own strength. Like Jesus has promised us himself, and that outside of that, we then have the capacity to feel the way we want about the story that he's writing in our lives because of how he's deemed it, who he says we are. And that's what I feel like you've modeled for me so well over the last 4 years, is not anything out of your own strength, but instead by saying, this is who I believe God has made me to be. This is the capacity that he's given me to do what he so clearly called me to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not doing it out of my own strength. I feel like that's what sets you apart from so much of culture, is that you've told all of us we also have that same capacity,
mm-hmm.
and that you can show up to people's hard in their stories because you've lived it for yourself and you've taken it and you've redefined it and you use what God has given you. And then you've shared that wealth with others. You've blazed that trail in the wilderness, you know, that so many people are looking for, and you've grabbed their hands and said, you're coming with me because I know that you have the same capacity that I did and I still do.
Yeah.
This has been a really great how-to episode. I feel like this is going to be a tool that I put in my own toolbox when I'm facing hard things and need to be reminded of the truths that God has so generously shared with you that you've shared with others. And more than any of that, I feel like this has been a reminder to all of us that we have capacity to do hard things.
Caroline, we always ask on this podcast this question, and we'd love for you to answer. What is good in your story? What is hard in your story? And how do you live with the tension of the good hard in your story?
I am an Enneagram 7 and feel like there's a lot of good that comes with that. And I have a lot of capacity right now in my story to be spontaneous, to be able to show up for others on short notice, to go on adventures at short notice. This past year, I got to climb the Grand Teton in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, which is very, very high up on my bucket list. And I don't take any of those things for granted. They're good things.
Yeah.
Enjoying nature, being outside, going on adventures last minute, all of those things I love and are really good. And right alongside that is I'm in a very different season of life than pretty much all of my close community. So, you know, where I'm at, single, not a mom, you know, not currently raising a young family, all of my best friends and closest people, that's where they're at. And when I am tempted to look left and look right and think to myself, well, something is off about my story then, because I'm not where the majority of the people I love the most are.
Yeah.
I'm tempted to think my expectations haven't been met, you know, that somehow the goodness of God is not showing up for me in the same way that it's showing up for them. And that is why this episode has ministered so deeply to my own soul, and why I can be bossy with my own soul and saying, that's not actually the truth. Like that, you know, God has promised me his assurance in this life and the fruition of his presence in the next. And at the end of the day, what else more do I really need than that? You know,
have you ever thought that maybe one reason God has you right here, right now for these past 4 years is for that very reason?
I have thought that actually multiple times, which is really, really cool to think back on, you know, that he would care about us so much that I would have that wisdom weaved into my own being over the last 4 years,
you know,
that he would care and love me enough, you know, to allow me to glean that wisdom over the last 4 years of working for Hope Heals.
Well, it is a deep privilege and responsibility to hopefully have you look to me as I look to Jesus. And as we all suffer on earth and all have the opportunity to cry out to him to ease the pain. So,
isn't that beautiful, though, that he gives us one another to blaze those trails?
That's
for
right.
One another. So
that's right. What a gift you are, Caroline.
What love a gift you are. I love you.
We're hugging. You can't see us. We're hugging.
We're having a moment.
Anyway, guys, thank you for tuning in today to be with us. What a gift to have you join us as we long to honor both the good and the hard in our stories. Everyone, what a glorious season of this podcast we've had. Thank you for listening. We will see you back here in the fall. Stay tuned in September for more good hard goodies coming at ya. Thank you for joining us on the Good Hard Story podcast. To learn more about what we are doing, follow us on Instagram at Hope Heals. Check out all things Hope Heals at hopeheals.com. Don't forget to subscribe to this wherever you get podcasts, and please feel free to share this episode with somebody who needs to hear it. Good Hard Story Podcast is a production of Good Hard Story, LLC. It is produced and edited by Leah Case and Mary Austin Hall. And I am your fearless and fabulous host, Catherine Wolf. Come back and join us every week where we believe that the good story and the hard story can be the very same story. With you and for you, friend.